eternity and existence, you believe that he is destroyed. So, relieve us from the demons. The Lord has appeared. Therefore, Satyavratam. The promise that you made, that you come to deliver your devotees, now you are fulfilling it. So, these prayers are being offered by Devatas, while Krishna is in the womb of Devaki, in the prison of God. Satyavratam. Satyavaram. You are the supreme truth. Trisatyam. Trisatyam means that you exist in all the three phases of reality, past, present and future. Then, satyasya yonin nidam cha satye, that this material world, it is satya. But how does it come from? You are the yoni of this world. Satyasya yonin nidam cha satye. Nidam means you are not only the source of this world, but you have also entered into this world. Nidam is the pravishya. And that is why, whatever truth this world has, that is because you are present in it. At the same time, satyasya satyam, pitu satya netram. Among all the things that are true, you are the truest. Pitu satya netram. And whatever looks attractive and true to the eyes, it is you who give it that truth. Satyatmakam. That your whole form is made of truth. The truth is Satchitananda. It is not temporary. Satyatmakam tvam sharanam brahmanaha. So that Lord, who is the embodiment of the Supreme Truth, we surrender to that Lord and take shelter of Him. So this is like the words. Satyavratam satyaparam trisatyam.
Satyavratam satyaparam trisatyam.
Satyasya yonim nintam cha satye.
Satyasya yonim nintam cha satye.
Satyasya satyam rita satya netram.
Satyasya satyam rita satya netram.
Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna.
Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna.
Satyavratam satyaparam trisatyam.
Satyavratam satyaparam trisatyam.
Satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye.
Satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye.
Satyasya satyam nita satya netram.
Satyasya satyam nita satya netram.
Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna.
Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna.
Satyavratam satyaparam trisatyam.
Satyavratam satyaparam trisatyam.
Satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye.
Satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye.
Satyasya satyam mrita satya netram.
Satyasya satyam mrita satya netram.
Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna.
Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna.
Satyavratam
satyaparam trisatyam. Satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye.
Satyasya
satyam rita satya netram.
Satyatmakam
tvam sharanam prapanna.
Satyavratam
satyaparam trisatyam.
Satyasya yonim
nihitam cha satye.
Satyasya
satyam rita satya netram.
Satyamakam
tvam saranam prapanna.
Satyavratam
satyaparam trisatyam.
Satyasya
yonim nihitam cha satye.
Satyasya
satyam rita satya netram.
Satyatmakam
tvam saranam prapanna.
शुरुदितं येना तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्याय विष्णुः
राधा कृष्ण पादान श्री विशाखान्वितां नमो कृष्ण पादाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांता स्वामी विहारे नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशकारिणे नमो महावदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्या नाम्ने गौरविषे नमः। हे कृष्णा करुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते सप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी श्रीराधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी विषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछारूप्रश्च विद्वा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतिकानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः।
Everything except Brahman is an illusion. But that ideal leads to a fundamental problem. If Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya, then where did the Mithya come from? If Brahman is the only thing that exists, then where does Maya come from? The Upanishads talk about Tattvatraya. Tattvatraya is three truths: Jiva, Ishwara and Prakriti. In science they call it matter, consciousness and the causative principle. So, Jiva, Ishwara and Prakriti are the fundamental essence of existence. And their idea is all three are a product of Maya. The only thing that exists is Brahman, and apart from Brahman, everything else is Maya. But then, where does the Tattvataraya come from? Where does Jiva, Ishwara, Prakriti? Where do they come from? They say they are a result of Maya. Okay, then where does Maya come from? Actually, where Maya comes from is a question which they just can't answer. They try to juggle words and get away with it. Maya is simultaneous, existent, non-existent, inconceivable entity. How can something be existent and non-existent? It has to be existent or non-existent, one of the two. So they just can't explain this. So for Mayavad, two questions. Where does Maya come from? And if we are all God, then how can Maya control God? How can Maya cover God? These questions are fatal. And although the Mayavadis try to juggle words and get away from these questions, they really have no satisfactory answer. Because actually Maya, the Jiva, Ishwara and Prakriti are not Maya. We often give the argument that God has to be a person, because I, you, he, all of us, the children of God are persons. So, if the children are persons, obviously the father must be a person. But that argument is, no, you are an illusion, because we ourselves are not persons. So your logic itself is foundationally wrong. They say, I am not a person, he's not a person. Now that's fine, that's your philosophical abstraction, that's your philosophical imagination. But we all feel a sense of personality. You go through certain emotions, which unless you share, I cannot come to know. You have individual personality and individual emotions. And I have individual personality and individual emotions. So even if we say that this is a result of Maya, then the argument comes, okay, where does this conception of personality come from? Where does the conception of individuality come from? Unless there is some personality, some individuality, somewhere existing, there will not even be the illusion of individuality and personality. Even for illusion, for us to mistake something, mistake one thing to be something else, a second thing must have existed somewhere else by which we will mistake it. It's like they say, actually this world is false. The only thing that is there is a rope. But we mistake it to be a snake. And they say, oh, when you awaken the knowledge, you will see that there is no snake, there is only a rope. Fine. Accept this reasoning, but take this reasoning a little further. Okay, where does the, in the illusion, the misconception that this rope is a snake come from? Unless I have had some experience of a snake before, I would not mistake the rope to be a snake. Like that, if we are all thinking ourselves to be persons, there must be some experience of personality, which is what we are mistaking our current personality to be. So there has to be a original personality. That's why the correct understanding is of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, this world is reflection of the spiritual world. Urdhva Moola Adhishyakam. So, the reflection exists. If I see it, it is there. But if I go in and try to enjoy the reflected mango, I won't get any taste. But the water which reflects the mango is there. The reflection is, to my perception, there. And the real mango is also there. It is not that all three, the reflection, the reality and the reflecting medium, all are illusion. No. It's real. So our understanding, which is the actual conclusion of Vedic scriptures, is that this world is real. Our personality is real. And Krishna is a real Supreme Personality. And there are real relationships between them. So, the Mayavadi idea is that this relationship which we have in this world is an illusion. And even the relationship with God should be developed so that we get out of the illusory relationship with this world. And then eventually, we dissolve the relationship with God also and we become. once and for all. Their idea is that, yeah, you can develop relationship, do some bhakti, so that the bhakti will give you some higher emotions by which you can get rid of the lower emotions. But then eventually you have to go beyond bhakti. Now Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita very clearly, 7.7, mattaha parataram na anya kinchit asti dhananjaya. There is no truth superior to me, even the slightest way. I mean, Krishna is speaking mattaha. He is not referring to some Brahman. He is referring to himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Krishna is the highest revelation of the Absolute Truth. And as devotees, we understand that the cause of our suffering is detachment from Krishna. When we become detached from Krishna, we come in an illusory realm where we experience illusory emotions. What do we mean by illusory emotions? The scriptures differentiate between bhavana and vasana. Bhavana is deeper. Vasana is superficial. So love is a bhavana, lust is a vasana. Now what is the difference? Let's take a simple example to understand it. If a small child comes along and we tickle his stomach, what happens? He starts laughing. Now he's really laughing. And we can see him laughing. Stop, he's laughing. Giggling, he's laughing. So is that happiness? You see, yeah, that's happiness. Somebody may argue. Okay, fine, that's happiness. And happiness is the goal of life. Then we can just manufacture a perpetual tickling machine. And let's keep tickling each other for the rest of our lives. And all of us can be happy. We all intuitively understand that, yes, tickling may produce some happiness, but that is not real happiness. Certain physical stimuli produces certain physical reaction. But that does not touch the innermost core of our hearts. Real happiness is when deep within our hearts are satisfied, our hearts are delighted, and that is expressed in the smile and in the laughter. That is happiness. So, similarly, vasana, lust, actually touches us from external. It stimulates our senses. And through the stimulation of our senses, it touches our mind, it agitates our mind a little bit. And we feel some excitement, we feel some pleasure. But just as the pleasure of tickling is a superficial pleasure, the pleasure of lust is also superficial pleasure. Although, it's much more deeply entrenched in our psyche. And that's why many people consider that as the ultimate goal and the ultimate truth of life. The thing that sex is what makes life worth living. But it's very superficial. And that's why if sex were really the source of happiness, then the prostitutes would be the happiest people in the world. But no, they are actually miserable, frustrated. Somebody say, oh, they're not doing it out of love. But yes, people do it out of love. And they have divorces in 1.5 years. Why? Because it's not love. So love is an emotion that originates in the soul and then expresses itself through the mind to the body and the senses. Whereas lust is something which originates basically in the body and the mind. That's the difference. So vasana is mostly bodily and mental. And bhavana is something which is much deeper, originating from the soul. And today most people mistake lust to be love and they don't know anything higher. But there is a huge difference between the two. And the scriptures teach us that. So, actually the soul has a natural love for Krishna. And that is not at the level of the body or at the mind or the senses, but at the level of the soul. And that relationship when revived gives the deepest satisfaction to the heart. And that's why the great sages in the past, they are ready to renounce this world so that they can develop love for Krishna. But the important thing is not to renounce the world. Important thing is to develop love for Krishna. And therefore, Krishna comes to this world to reveal to us how there is wonderful reciprocation of love between him and his devotees. So, God has two aspects. One is called immanence and the second is transcendence. So, we all have heard the word transcendental, isn't it? Krishna is transcendental. The transcendent means who is beyond matter and beyond material world. So, So, parastasmat bhavonyo vyakto vyaktah sanatanam yahasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita describes the 8th chapter 20th verse about another world beyond this world. So that is my eternal abode. When all in this world is destroyed, that part remains as it is. So that is the abode of Krishna where he resides, which is beyond this world. Na tadbhasayate suryo na shashanko na pavakata yakadvana nivartante tadbhama paramam mama. In the 15th chapter, after describing this material world through the intriguing analogy of upside down banyan tree, then Krishna describes that there is another abode. And he says that abode is not illuminated by fire, sun or moon. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita on this verse, he says, apparently Krishna is like these three objects, the sun, the moon and the fire. Because like the sun is the source of light, and light enables us to see. So he says when that abode is not illumined by the sun, he says that abode is beyond the power of the eyes to see. And this moon, this picture expresses the devata, the Somadev, is actually in charge of the mind. And that's why when there are phases of the moon, full moon and no moon, like people who have mental disturbances, they get aggravated at that time. So he says that actually, even with the mind, we cannot conceive that abode. That's why it's not illuminated by the moon. And what about it is beyond fire? Since fire is associated with speech. So when it's a fire, he has a fiery speech. I've heard a fiery speech. So he says, we cannot describe that abode by our speech also. So we cannot see it with our eyes, we cannot conceive it with our mind, we cannot describe it with our speech. But that does not mean that it is not attainable. There are two aspects. One is to say that the impersonal is to describe the absolute truth as Brahman. They use the word anirvachaniya. Whereas the Vaishnavacharyas use the word achintya. Achintya means what? Inconceivable. And anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya means, vachan means what? Speech or words, yeah. Nirvachaniya means that which cannot be described by words. So, anirvachaniya. So, their understanding of God is of absolute truth. Brahman is that. Brahman is anirvachaniya. That actually you cannot describe it by words. So, one of Srila Prabhupada's stalwart disciples, Ravindra Sarup Prabhu, in the 1970s when he was the temple president of Philadelphia Temple. He's a very serious devotee, very wonderful scholar. He had done his PhD in religious studies when he was joining his con, he was completing it. When he completed and then he joined his con. So at that time, an impersonal organization had come there. And they had made pamphlets all over Philadelphia city. And the pamphlet was, Krishna meditated and became the love divine. Jesus meditated and became the sacrifice divine. Buddha meditated and became the enlightenment divine. You meditate and become the supreme divine. Learn meditation. Learn the secrets of meditation. The devotees felt so angry with this serious blatant propaganda that we can become God. They return to the service of God. And the devotee considers anyone trying to become God or claiming to be God as expressly manifesting his explicitly manifesting his envy towards. So, the devotees told him, we should go and challenge and expose these rascals. So, he said, actually, we should not go to their program and disrupt their program. It will not look good. But the devotees said, you must go. Then finally they went. So, there are two people on the diet, and both of them were alternatively speaking. Very captivating. For 2 hours they were speaking, mesmerizing the whole audience. About how by meditating you can become God. And then, during the class also, because the devotees, Hare Krishna devotees were in Shevan headed Bhuti Kurta, so they could stand, they stand out. Among all the other American audience who were dressed in different ways. Actually, it was a hippie crowd. So the hippies would often dress in unconventional ways. But still, nothing was as unconventional as the devotees. So you know, there are people who would shave off their head, but the devotees would shave and keep something left. So some people would wear hand gloves, but anybody would wear only one hand glove. And that hand glove, just one finger comes out of the hand glove. So, different people wear different kind of dress, but they have the suit. They wear a pajama around their legs. And they died. Some people have the Halloween costumes, where they imitate animals. So they have a tail. But these devotees wear a dress in which there's a tail in the front and in the back.
So, even from the material point of view, the hippies would love to do outrageous things. But when they were introduced to Krishna consciousness, they found this is the most outrageous thing you can do. So they would like to do crazy things like, suddenly you are going on the street and suddenly you start dancing on the street. And the police would catch them and punish them. But the Drauga suddenly said, Yatra. And now they were dancing on the street and the same police was escorting and protecting them. So the devotee stood out among all the people over there. And the speaker glanced at them a few times during the class. And then at the end they asked, any questions? Immediately Ramana Sarupa raised his hand. And then they didn't want to answer, but they looked around. And the audience was also quite into it. They understood, this is from some other hour, there's going to be some firework. So nobody else raised hand. And very reluctantly, they looked at it.
Yes. So, Raja Sarupa said that, you said that Krishna meditated and became God. But he killed the Vishputana when he was just a few days old. So when did you learn meditation and when did you practice meditation to become God? Both of them looked as if he had very severely offended. They looked very pained. And they said, words, words. The other person caught the thing. Words, words. And they had some people, some followers staged in the audience of real this, I think. Words, words. My dear friend, do you not understand that the truth is beyond words? Words are the cause of duality and illusion and suffering. Do not create illusion by words. Learn to go beyond words, and then you will understand the truth. For 2 hours, when you were speaking words, they were not illusions.
When I ask one question, then words become illusions. So, what double standards?
If the person is really considered the absolute truth to be unirvachaniya, the first thing they should do is they should shut up. Stop speaking, stop writing. Because that truth is beyond words. According to their own philosophy. But the correct understanding is that actually Krishna is not unirvachaniya. He is anantavachaniya. Now you can have unlimited words to glorify Krishna. Yes, even if we glorify him in unlimited words, we cannot glorify him completely. We cannot describe him completely. That is perfectly agree. But Krishna, the perfection of words is to use them to glorify Krishna, not to glorify the mundane objects of this world. So, Kavi Karnapuram has written Dana Vrindavan Jampu, in which, when he is describing Krishna, for one incident, for one description, you can give 20 analogies. And I just get mesmerized seeing the beauty of the analogies that he is using. And he says, even after giving these 20 analogies, actually, I cannot describe Krishna. Why? Because Krishna is unlimited. So we don't say that we conquer Krishna by our words. But still, we perfect our tongue, we perfect our intelligence by using it to glorify Krishna. So, we accept that Krishna is achintya. Achintya means what? He cannot be understood by our intelligence. We cannot catch him with our intelligence. But surely we can use him to glorify, use our intelligence to glorify him. So, saying on Mukhe, Atah Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhave Grahyam Indriyai Devonmukhe hi bhajam swayameva spuratyadam. So the Padma Purana describes Atakshi Krishna Ramadi, that the name and form of Krishna cannot be described by our, cannot be pursued, cannot be grasped by our senses. But Devonmukhe hi bhajam. When we do seva of Krishna, starting with our tongue, we use our tongue to glorify Krishna. Then, swayam eva spuratyata. Then, Krishna reveals himself. Now, even if a pure devotee understands Krishna, he never understand Krishna fully. He understands Krishna enough to fall in love completely with Krishna. So, the Kena Upanishad describes, he who says he knows does not know. And he who says he does not know, knows. He who says that I know the Absolute Truth, he does not know, because the Absolute Truth is unlimited. And he who says I do not know, that is two categories. That people are really ignorant of it. It's not that somebody says I don't know, that means he knows. What it means is, just like somebody has never experienced the ocean. He says I don't know the ocean. That's one kind of person. Other is a scuba diver, is there deep into the ocean, gone way, way, way into the depths of the ocean. And then he comes out and he says, the ocean is so vast, I can't know the ocean. He knows the ocean according to his capacity, but he doesn't know the ocean completely. That's what the Kena Upanishad says. He who says he does not know, actually knows. So therefore, as devotees, we don't try to conquer Krishna with our senses. But we certainly serve Krishna with our senses. In the Christian theology, there is not much description of Gaudium, positive description, like yesterday we were discussing. There is no description of the form of God. Now the Christians try to justify this absence of knowledge of God, the absence of positive knowledge of God in their scriptures, by saying that God is unknowable to us with our intellect. And therefore, there cannot be any knowledge of God available to us. The Muslims try to justify it by saying that God does not have any form. But of course, we have devotees who have studied the Quran and made a long list of verses which talk about God's eyes, God's face, God's hands, God's legs, stunning. So, there are so many verses in the Quran itself which talk about God having form. So, actually, God having form is well described in the scriptures, in all of the scriptures. But the principle is that in the Judeo-Christian literature, there is not much positive description of God's personality and God's self-existence. God's self-existence means God as he exists independent of the world. God's one function is to maintain us. But what about God's own personal life, God's self-existence? So, the Christians say that actually God is so great that he is unknowable to us. We perfectly agree with that. Yes, God is so great that he is unknowable to us. But if God is really all-powerful, and God is really omnipotent, then he should have the ability to give us the knowledge to understand, to give us the ability to understand. If we say that God cannot give us the ability to understand him, that means God is not omnipotent, God is not all-powerful. That becomes a deficiency in God. Yes. So Krishna has revealed beautiful forms through the Vedic scriptures. And that form exists eternally in the spiritual world. So the scriptures say that actually with our senses we cannot reach the Supreme Lord. That is impossible for us. But we can use our senses to glorify the Supreme Lord. And when we use our senses to glorify the Supreme Lord, we become purified. Actually, when we, in the 89th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni goes to Narayana Muni and asks him a question. See, our senses are material, God is spiritual. And how can we describe that Supreme Lord with our material senses? So Srimad Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary to this verse, which is a very profound analysis, he says that when a conditioned soul hears that Krishna is a young boy with a complexion like a bluish black complexion like a freshly formed rain cloud, then what does the conditioned soul do? He imagines a good-looking young boy. He imagines a bluish-black rain cloud. And he superimposes it. And he imagines, oh, that is Krishna. Chakravarti Pad says categorically that The superimposition of two imagined objects cannot produce the supreme personality of God. Therefore, he says, the conditioned soul cannot think of Krishna. With the material senses, he cannot think of Krishna. But the higher scriptures tell us to think of Krishna. Krishna, so many times the Bhagavad Gita says that manmanabhavamadvattva, always think of me. So, when we, with our senses, try to think according to the description of scriptures, then it's not that we should think of Krishna, we should convince Krishna that we are thinking of him. When Krishna becomes pleased by our effort to think of him, then Krishna reveals himself in our hearts. And when Krishna reveals himself in our hearts, then that is not the product of our imagination being exercised. That is the product of Krishna revealing himself. So therefore, a devotee understands that my spiritual advancement depends on Krishna's mercy. I cannot even think of Krishna without Krishna's effort. But we can surely try to think of Krishna according to the descriptions that are given in the scripture. And when we do that, then Krishna reveals himself accordingly. So that's why our senses, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. Narayana in the Nam Bhakti Sutra says that the senses should be used in the service of the Lord of the senses. And then Krishna reveals himself by that. Now, this we have to talk all this in connection with Krishna's transcendence. So Krishna exists in his own spiritual abode beyond this world. As I said, Satya Pratam Satya Param Satya. He is Param, he is beyond this world. And in the Christian tradition, as well as the Islamic tradition, this understanding is clear that God is beyond this world. In fact, Islam is only among the only religion among the major religions in the world which does not consider God to be omnipresent. They say God is omniscient by his knowledge acquired for us, but they don't think that God is present everywhere. It's a little strange. But they consider that God is, Allah is present on his throne above the seventh jannah. Now, if he's formless, then how is he present on the throne? It's just that if you ask questions like this, they will say, you are doing the work of the devil. They use people and you will be punished by Allah for that. Allah is beyond our intelligence, and don't ask questions which are beyond your intelligence. Now, it's one thing that we also say that there's something which is inconceivable. But what is the inconceivability about? Inconceivability is not about the fundamental issues of life. Why? Who am I? Why am I suffering in this world? What is my actual identity? And no, there's no inconceivability about that. There's a very clear understanding about that. But they say that actually, for example, they don't accept the idea of karma. Because of which they get into a lot of trouble. So what is the trouble? They can't understand why people are suffering in this world. They say, oh, suffering in this world is actually Allah's test to you. Fine, Allah's test, we also accept Krishna's test. But the real problem is not that Allah is testing us. But the real problem is, why does Allah test different people differently? Imagine all of you go for an exam and everybody gets a different question paper. And some people get a very easy question paper, some people get a very difficult question paper. And then you think, why like this?
Don't ask any questions.
You know, it will be very outrageous and discriminatory. So actually, this is Allah's inconceivable will. The principle of testing is fine, but the real problem is, not that, you know, if there's a flood and everybody becomes homeless. And you know, everybody is suffering, you don't feel so bad. But, you know, if somebody comes and blows up only your house, and everybody else has their house and you don't have your house, then why me? So what causes resentment is not the principle of suffering. Suffering is there, that also causes resentment. But real anger, you'll have anger even towards God. Real anger in this world is, why there is differential suffering? Why so much suffering in my life and why so little in his life? Actually, if you go in his life, you find there's so much suffering in his life also. Everybody is suffering. But still, because there's literally some people are poverty stricken, disease, and they have terrible relationship problems and everything. So, why the differential suffering? So now we understand it's because of individual karma coming from previous lives. But they don't have the understanding. So actually, intelligence, the third introduction of Bhagavatam describes that doubt is a function of intelligence. That only if a person is intelligent, then he can have doubts. But then, it's also important to know that doubt is not the only function of intelligence. If somebody only keeps doubting all the time, then you will never get anywhere. So one has to put faith eventually. So, Ravindra Sarupra, one of Prabhupada's senior disciples, talking about earlier. So what happened? He was in the study of philosophy earlier. And in philosophy, you learn to become skeptical. All of you know what is skeptical? Skeptical is whatever you tell, you just doubt it. So, he heard from some of the most famous skeptics in European philosophy, and he became a skeptic. And he said, I became a high priest in the temple of skepticism, worshipping the deity of, what is it? Deity of rational nihilism. Nihilism is refute everything. So he said, you would present any philosophy to me and I could find out faults in it. this is wrong. And it will give me so much joy. When you bring any philosophy, I can find faults in it. And then he said, this went on for almost a year or two. And then I thought, just be hey, something is wrong, something is missing. Skepticism can tell me what is wrong. But skepticism can never tell me what is right. If I am skeptical, I am searching for faults. And I may be able to find faults in everything, but I will never know what is the truth. So he said, that time I realized they would have their own skeptics conference, where all skeptics would come together and discuss. So I told them my latest realization. He said, we are all not being sufficiently skeptical. Really? How can we increase our skepticism? How can we increase our skepticism? Yes. We should become skeptical about skepticism. That means, yes, I am saying that skepticism can show me the faults of everything. But why can't I become skeptical about skepticism? Can skepticism show me the truth? No, it cannot. So one of his colleagues said, I think that, you know, you feel like you are walking on a tightrope without any net below. He says, I don't even know if the rope is there. So when you are skeptical, you cannot believe in anything. You know, by skeptical argument, you can prove that you yourself don't exist. The only thing that exists is your skepticism, without you. So, then he decided that actually, I will make one criteria for deciding which philosopher to follow in my life. Actually, I realize if you go for argument, counter argument, and counter counter argument, and counter 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 argument, there is no end to this. So, the simple criteria I decided was that if I hear about some philosophy, then whoever is teaching their philosophy, at best, I will become like that person. Now, if somebody is teaching a philosophy, somebody is following a philosophy, at best, by following that philosophy, I will become like the person who is teaching the philosophy. And do I want to become like that? I said, by this one criteria, I could safely and easily reject all the philosophies that I came across. Till I met Srila Prabhupada. When I met Srila Prabhupada, here was a person who radiated such a personal warmth, such a discerning sincerity of purpose, such a deep concern for everyone, that he spoke. There was no flippancy, there was no skepticism, there was no doubt. Now, every word that he spoke had the weight of absolute truth. And I met him, I talked with him, and I felt I want to become like this person. And that's how I chose the path of Krishna consciousness. When Sadhana Mala was recently invited to the Mantralaya is like a minister's office in Maharashtra. So then he was asked to give a talk. So after the talk, there was one skeptical bureaucrat. He said, Swami, you are talking about God and all this. But Darwin and evolution has put all this to be bogus. There is no God. So, Maharaj said, during my search for truth, I also read about Darwin. I read his biography. And I found that the more his theory became successful, the more his personal life became miserable. You know, he had no relationships. And he eventually lost all his aesthetic sense.
he couldn't relish poetry, he couldn't relish music, he couldn't relish art, he couldn't relish literature, leave alone relishing devotion. Even mundane sattvic things he couldn't relish. Why? Because if ultimately everything is a product of molecules, then that is just a set of molecules, I am a set of molecules, what is there to relish? So he died a famous but unhappy person, lonely, unhappy person. So he said, that's when I said it. That if this is what Darwin's theory did to him, it cannot be the absolute truth and I don't want to follow it. So we can scientifically also write Darwin's theory of evolution, but this is the personal experiential way of understanding it. So, yes, as devotees, we may also get doubts. And when we get doubts, we have forums that can ask questions and answer the doubts. But the important thing is we should also follow the process. By skepticism, we will never arrive at any real understanding. When we follow the process, by following the process, we get realization, we get revelation. So, in the Christian tradition, God is considered transcendent, and so there is no knowledge of God available to us. Now, before Christianity, there were the Greeks and the Romans in Europe. When Christianity came in the Middle East, and then Paul took it all and spread all over Europe. So, the Greeks and Romans, they had the idea of the immanence of God. Immanence means God is present within nature. God is present within nature. Now, Andantarastha Paramanu Jayantarastham. The Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma, Lord Krishna, he is situated in every atom. Andantarastha. He is situated within the universe and Paramanu. He is situated in every atom also. So, is God present in nature? Yes, he is present in nature. Because of his presence in nature only, nature is functioning. So, Krishna is super soul of the body. Sorry, the Shirodakshaya Vishnu is the super soul of the body. The Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the super soul of the universe. And the Karanodakshaya Vishnu is the super soul of the Mahatattva. So, he permeates all this. And that's how actually matter acquires the ability to do any activity. So, as I was earlier telling, the Islamic religion does not consider God to be omnipresent. And because of that, they don't understand how God manifests as the deity. But Krishna is present everywhere, and because he is present everywhere, when he chooses to, he can manifest from wherever he wants. So, when the devotees pray to him, he manifests in a form which is made according to scriptural description, and Krishna surely manifests. If we say God cannot manifest through matter, then we are limiting God. If we say that God will get contaminated by contact with matter, and that is, you know, matter is so powerful that you can contaminate God also. Since we are already in matter, then how contaminated we will be? And if God becomes contaminated by contact with matter, then what hope is there for us to become free from contamination from matter? Isn't it? It's a very incomplete philosophy. I'm in the process of writing a book about deity worship. It's called Idol Worship or Ideal Worship. So actually it's not idol worship, it is ideal worship. So actually Krishna manifests himself in this world also because he is already present in this world. So this is the immanence. So the Vedic understanding is complete. We accept that God is transcendent and we accept also God as